So 8 years ago today, the question for people in New York is, where were you then? Of course, today it's not as eerie as it's been for a lot of the anniversaries of September 11th, 2001. It was a beautiful, sunny day that day 8 years ago. Today it's cloudy, so it won't be as eerie thinking about 9/11 today. But we can all think about how on that day, when planes hit the World Trade Center, a plane hit the Pentagon, and Flight 93 crashed in Pennsylvania, lives were thrown together and then ripped apart, tragically for all time, or over time, because we moved on. Joining me now in the studio is Sarah Bunting, who remembers where she was on September 11th.
Yes, I do. Thanks for having me.
Remembers a life, who you were thrown together with, who you've been disconnected from for 8 years or so now. Tell me that story.
Well, I was downtown. I was on a panel, speaking on a panel about, I believe, internet content valuation. Very exciting stuff.
Remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, you sort of remember everything from the day. But I was downtown. We, you know, heard what was going on. We went to have a look, my panel mates and I. And then the first tower to go down, Tower 2, began to fall. And I sort of walked away, not thinking running would do much good, and found myself in the Bank of New York. And I was there with this man named Don.
And we should point out, a rubble-covered, dust-covered, you know, the aftermath was everywhere around you.
Yeah, yeah. When we looked out the windows of the Bank of New York, there was nothing to see, just dust, debris. We went outside briefly at about 10:30, but then, of course, it repeated itself. But I became aware of Don because he was asking a bank guard what the vault was like, whether we could hide there, just logistical questions.
A calm, cool, collected soul in the middle of something pretty emotionally wrenching.
Relative to me, yeah. Yes.
You were a mess.
Yeah. Well, I was nothing, but at least someone was taking charge and asking some questions like, you know, where's the bathroom and can we civilians use the, you know, drink your water from your water cooler? So I decided to stand near him and listen to any answers he was getting, which weren't many. And then we just sort of found ourselves deciding without saying so to stand together, to at least have someone to talk to. It all felt so unreal that to just have another human being to make small talk with even was a mental lifesaver that day.
And that was the last time you saw him?
Yeah.
Don. Right.
Yeah. The last time I saw him, we were told to leave by a firefighter, and we walked over to the FDR Drive, and there was a call for ferries taking passengers back to Jersey City, mm-hmm. which that was my understanding, that that's where he lived. And he got on a ferry, and that was that. I knew him for an hour, and then he was gone.
Why have you tried to reconnect with him, and why do you think that's important to you?
I've tried to reconnect with him because I want to say thanks for keeping me sane. He's become, for me and also for readers of my blog, tomatonation.com, sort of a symbol of the very thin but still distinct silver lining of that day, which was that people were kind to each other. They were pulling together the world.
And this
sort of
gossamer web of connections that held people together on that day.
Yeah.
And we should note that, of course, your story, while certainly close to Ground Zero, wasn't at Ground Zero. You didn't lose a life or you weren't injured.
No.
But this sense of connection is a theme through all of the stories, be they really tragic or be they relatively benign in a sense.
Yeah. And I think, you know, without sort of trivializing anyone else's experience or just sort of the larger event, I think that people need narrative closure. I think bringing order out of chaos is something that's important to people psychologically, to sort of feel like an event like this is something that they can understand and can incorporate into their lives.
Well, Don, if you're out there, Sarah is in our studio. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'd be happy to reconnect you. Jim Dwyer joins us now, columnist for the New York Times, author of the fantastic book, 102 Minutes, The Untold Story of the Fight to Survive Inside the Twin Towers. He co-wrote that book with Kevin Flynn. Jim Dwyer, I've talked with you in the past, but this morning, if we think of what happened on 9/11 as about connections, thinking back 8 years, is also a little bit about reconnections. And there are a lot of people who met people for the first time and last time on that day. That's really a theme in your book.
Yes, for sure. I mean, the idea of the book was to figure out what was going on that we couldn't see from the outside. I mean, they talked about 9/11 as the most photographed and or filmed event in history, because there were so many people who were filming, and you know, everybody from network TV to amateurs sticking the cameras out the window. But you really didn't know what was going on. And in fact, even if you were in the building, you didn't know what was going on except in your little corner
right.
of it.
And tell me the story of Pete Negron, Carlos Da Costa, Pablo Ortiz, and Frank DeMartini, people who worked for the Port Authority, right. building maintenance guys whose story was unknown until you put it together.
Well, what happened was those guys worked on the 88th floor of the North Tower, and that was a Port Authority floor, the Port Authority who owned the building. And so when this thing happened, when the plane hit, they all thought there was a bomb in the building. They didn't, you know, they didn't realize the plane had hit. They just knew there was a lot of rubble and in some parts of their floor there were fire.
And they knew the building because they were the building guys.
They knew the building. Frank DeMartini was an architect, and the others all worked in different aspects of the building. And anyway, they got everybody off of their floor. They kind of ushered them all to the stairway. And while they were in the stairway, they hear pounding from above them, from a flight above them. And they went up those stairs, and they pried open the door, and there were a whole group of people who had been unable to open the exit door. Apparently, a lot of doors got knocked out of plumb by the impact of the plane. So they pried open the door, and I guess, you know, 30, 40 people came out of that floor. There was a law firm. There was a bunch of insurance companies. And they had no idea who Pablo Ortiz and Frank DeMartini were or any of these other folks. It just all of a sudden the door comes open. They're panicking because right. the floor is melting beneath their feet, literally, on that.
You know, the idea of these quiet guys helping people out, not knowing their own fate, and of course they didn't make it out of the building, we should say that.
Right.
I mean, is really emblematic of the importance of that moment of that day and how it's almost impossible to reconnect with it even 8 years later, Jim.
Yeah, these are not dramatic moments, you know.
Except
we eventually found out that Ortiz and DeMartini had gone through pretty much every floor from the 78th, from the, I guess, around the 91st or the 90th, down to the 78th floor, and they had a hand in getting people out of every one of those floors.
70 people saved by those guys, and of course the story is in 102 minutes, the untold story of the fight to survive inside the Twin Towers. Thanks so much, Jim Dwyer.
You're welcome. Bye.
And Sarah Bunting, what would you say to Don? You got 5 seconds.
Happy birthday.
Wow.
Get in touch.
Thanks, Sarah. To The Takeaway, I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.